So we were in James chapter 3. We were discussing the dangers of the tongue and how finished off, and we're looking at some of the things of how the tongue can set on fire the course of existence, how it can disrupt our lives, you know, when used incorrectly. And we looked at, you know, how it can damage you personally, how it can damage the family, and I had it marked that we stopped. We're going to start brethren. But did we cover the brethren, or we only half covered it?
Maybe we half covered it.
I put my tag there, and then I looked at it. I said, I remember saying something. Mm-hmm. Maybe I just said it, and then we had buzzer ring. Anyway, so I'm looking at, you know, what damage the tongue can cause amongst the brethren. What did we find looking at the scriptures here, or elsewhere as well, if you researched,
you know, gossiping and retelling things that are said in the incompetence can cause issues.
It can cause contentions between individuals. I guess hard feelings.
Sometimes, when we're talking about the teachers, sometimes because of jealousy or selfish ambition, they take upon themselves the role of teachers without knowledge, and they can lead astray, you know, into spiritual ruin the folks that are hearing them, because they speak what is false, and so that can be a real problem for the Lord's church.
Yeah, they're leading brethren astray, can end up in the result of their leading into temptation. Or even
they can lie, bad choices in their life. Marriage, divorce, remarriage issues, you know, without proper examination can cause people to really, you know, make bad choices that have eternal consequences.
Yeah, certainly our examples can hurt other people. And with regard to the tongue, what other damages could the tongue cause?
Studying in Galatians 5:20 talks about the deeds of the flesh, and in 20 it says idolatry, sorcery, enmity, strife, jealousy, outburst of anger, disputes, dissensions, factions, envying. A lot of those things that have something to do with the tongue, you know, tongue, something you say can lead to anger, or you say something out of anger, a dispute, you know, something you say, factions can be made, you know, there's all of those.
Yeah. And it's sort of what we see here in verse 16, talking about where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are. Used improperly, it can cause confusion and disorder within the church, amongst the brethren. You know, in Ephesians, we're supposed to be a unit, you know, striving to edify one another, to serve our God. And that gets disorganized, it just becomes disorderly. It's not going to be able to fulfill that purpose. Is it? No. I also had, and along the lines with Jamie said, and she looked at Galatians. I was looking at looking at 1 Corinthians. All right. First Corinthians chapter 1:10-12. And of course, this is speaking about some of the same thing I just mentioned, but Paul's pleading to them, you know, brethren, by the name of the Lord, of our Lord Jesus Christ, that you all speak the same thing. I plead with you that you all speak the same thing, and that there be no divisions among you, but that you be perfectly joined together in the same mind and in the same judgment. For it has been declared to me concerning you that those by those of Chloe's household, that there are contentions among you. I didn't read that last time, did I? I did? Okay. Well, anyway, so like maybe we covered this more than I can remember. But yeah, there's through our tongue we can cause disorder. We can, verse 14 of chapter 3, you know, we see that there's bitter and envy and self-seeking in your hearts. He tells them, do not boast and lie against the truth. So with our tongue we can boast, we can lie. I think in some sense that with the, back to the regard, this is specifically focused at teachers, this envying for position, for, and that, I guess jumping ahead, looking at the same thing that in the next section with regards to wisdom. But they're boasting and lying, professing wisdom for this, out of this envy and out of, well, I assume, this, you know, position to be perceived as masters or teachers. And then nationally, how can the tongue, what dangers can the tongue pose there with regards to the nations?
Dishonesty
and government rulers. Yeah, dishonesty, corruption. What, if those are things that are happening, but how does that, what does that lead to? What is what are the negative aspects of that?
People not liking
America. Well, or the nation.
Yeah.
I know, we live in America, so we think of a nation as our nation. There's lots of other nations in the world, too. Keep it general. yeah, the other... And if other countries don't like you, what's the result of that?
Wars.
Yeah, wars have begun. Conflict. You know, not just from the fact of them not liking you for whatever reason, but, you know, a high government official goes up and says something, or the people rise up and say ugly things about other countries. You get that hatred. And we see that going on in the Middle East a lot. I want to look at 2 Samuel chapter 10. Samuel chapter 10 and verse 3. This is when one of the king of Ammon died, and David sent some messengers to comfort the new king, which was the prince. And he said, the princes of the people of Ammon said to Hanun their lord, the new king, do you think that David has really, really honors your father because he has sent comforters to you? Has David not rather sent his servants to you to search the city, to spy it out, and to overthrow it? And therefore, you know, in the passages following, they dishonored the servants David had sent. They came back home, told David, and end result, there was a war, and God was with David, and they defeated these people. But David's intentions in verse 1 and 2 were sincere. He really sent these men to be honest. And here's the danger of the tongue, bad advice, you know, help guiding leaders, you know, that leads to wars. There's wars with other countries, and also what about within the country? You know, is everyone always of the same mind in our country? Nope. Let's say it loud so the recorder will pick it up. No, right? All those head nods shaking. Yeah, people rise up and speak against, you know, Republicans versus Democrats. Oh, they don't know what they're doing. Those guys don't know what they're doing. And there's causes tension and hatred and can lead to rebellions. I mean, even in our country, we've had a civil war once, you know, where families are fighting against families. The nation's fighting amongst itself. And we don't have to go read it, but in Judges chapter 9, we have the same situation where the tongue, which is what arouses the you know, using those words arouse, you know, hatred and dissension and leads to these rebellions. I also want to look at 1 Samuel 17. I'm going to be nice and answer more questions to get moving along. First Samuel 17. It's there, beginning verse 8. And this is, you know, the story of David and also and Goliath. And then it says in verse 8, Goliath, then he stood out and cried out to the armies of Israel and said to them, why have you come out to the line up for the battle? Am I not a Philistine, and you the servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves and let him come down to me. If he is able to fight with me and kill me, then we will be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and serve us. And I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together. And it says in the end of verse 11, the army of Israel, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. Of course, here is this man speaking against them and causes fear. A lot of things we see in the world are ugly or are bad. You know, these hatred and resentment and wars, a lot of it begins with the action of the tongue, speaking against one another. And of course, I didn't want to jump into it too much, but, you know, when we discuss brethren, even within, you know, our church, you know, these kind of discussion, we talk about the hard feelings, you know, speaking against one another, revealing secrets. Yeah, it starts with hard, you know, it starts with the tongue, results in hard feelings, and can end up with fights and bickering and war amongst ourselves, if you go to call it war. It's certainly a fighting amongst ourselves, and we'll see that later today in the next chapter. So, ending that, James moves on to discuss a new topic, beginning in verse 13, in regards to wisdom, two kinds of wisdom. I ask you to look at the passages, verse 13 through 18. See how many times you saw the word wisdom or word relating to wisdom. And I know I've asked for numbers. I haven't really been that focused on the number when everyone goes 4. You know. But the idea of we're looking at it and seeing that here's a thought that is a recurring thought and that we've, you know, assessed it. So where did y'all find?
Verse 13. Yeah,
verse 13.
2, 5,
and
wisdom.
It's
kind of 3
of
understanding
yep.
as well.
Yep, and understanding falls in with that as well. Wise, wisdom, understanding in verse 13. Well, according to my passage, different have different translations. What else?
15.
Yeah, 15. We have wisdom again.
And 17.
And 17.
I also had 18, by those who make peace. You would need to be wise not to, or you would need to have some sort of, in my thinking, some sort of rational wisdom to not engage in conflict, but to step back and try and make peace. Right?
Yes, I agree with you. I didn't count it, though, because then you'd have to look at a lot of things that out of wisdom come a lot of things. And so I was just looking merely for the, you know, not the results of wisdom, but the actual term itself, or at least as close as it, you know, relates. But yeah, I do agree with that statement. You know, doing what's right and following God comes from a sense of wisdom. So, you know, but so where, I want to look at where we talked about, this is divided into two types of wisdom. Where do each of these types of wisdom originate, as James specifies in verse 15 and verse 17? And verse 15, what do we have?
Earthly.
Earthly wisdom, right? He also So, you know, it's an earthly wisdom. It's not from above. The wisdom not from above, he calls it demonic, at least in my passage. So there's one type of wisdom. It's certainly not from God. It's from man or incorrect thinking. What's the, of course, what's the alternative to that?
Wisdom from above.
Yeah, it's wisdom from above. 17. Sorry? Yeah, 17. Godly wisdom, you know, that which is good and right. And, you know, I haven't even read this, the verses yet. I'll go ahead and read 13 through 18. And then we're going to answer here in this next section on top of page 15 what some of the characteristics that come from these types of wisdom. And as Don's pointed out, you know, peace comes from one form of wisdom, of course, godly wisdom. Verse 13 begins, "Who is wise and understanding among you? Let him show by good conduct that his works are done in the meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envy and self-seeking in your hearts, do not boast and lie against the truth. This wisdom does not descend from above, but is earthly, sensual, demonic. For where envy and self-seeking exist, confusion and every evil thing are there. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, willing to yield, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. Now the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace." So what, I guess looking at the first type of wisdom we discussed, the earthly wisdom, what characteristics are given that, I guess, stem from that form?
Jealousy, selfish ambition, arrogance, etc.
Yes.
Lies and envy.
Yeah, lies and envy. Self-seeking, selfishness, as Betty said. It also had sensual. Did not call it sensual, demonic. So this, I guess, you know, more relying on yourself and, I guess, satisfying, I don't say needs, the, you know, our desires, or coming from that. And what about the alternative, the wisdom from above, in verse 13 and 17 through 18? What do we have characteristics of that form of wisdom?
Pure.
It's a pure wisdom.
Good behavior and his deeds.
Good behavior.
Full of mercy.
Yes.
Peaceable, gentle.
Yes, peaceable, it's gentle.
Without hypocrisy and unwavering. It's the good, it produces good fruits, you know, where the other does not produce good fruits.
That's correct, yeah. It's produces good fruits, the fruits of righteousness. And we're seeing all these things, mercy, peace, gentleness, without hypocrisy. Also mentions without partiality. And you know, that's just sort of a throwback to earlier in this, that, you know, James has warned them of the partiality they had amongst themselves. Seeing this form of wisdom isn't employed greatly amongst them. Also another one I was looking for. I thought it was important.
I put in gentleness there when you're talking about good behavior and gentleness, the way that you approach it. Up in verse 13.
In verse 17, it also mentions the willing to yield. And I find that important. You know, yielding is submitting. And that's, it's important because so many times it's difficult for people to engage in that, to submit. For brethren, of course, the most important thing is willing to yield and submit to God. You know, submitting to God and just following His commandments and doing what is right, when it, even if it may not be doing what we want.
Yeah.
Any comments?
Trying to figure out where what our word for your willing to yield is.
Oh, okay. That's fine. 17.
Reasonable. Just find what you have in your word. In your
reasonable.
Oh, okay. Reasonable. It really comes down to go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Mm-hmm. It really comes down to seeking either the glory for God and righteousness, doing what's right, or seeking self-glory. Glory for self. That's what these guys were after.
Yeah. Just trying to correlate reasonable and mind willing to yield. And I think a lot of times when you think of being reasonable, you know, is that willing to compromise. Mm-hmm. And I think it's sort of the same thing, you know, willing to shift from your perspective and to yield, to submit.
You know, Michael, when you're looking at this, and this whole chapter and going on in chapter 4, it's talking to teachers in verse 1. And so if you think of it from a teacher's point of view, why are you teaching? Are you teaching because you have something that you want to prove to everyone else, I'm really great, look at me? Or are you teaching because you are trying to serve the people that you're teaching? And as a teacher, I mean, this is what this whole chapter, you know, what you say with your words and how you're acting and where your wisdom comes from. All of this is talking about what your ambition is. Is your ambition for your students and for God, or is your ambition for yourself?
That's right. And, I want to say just rely on just teachers, but teachers are masters, leaders. You know, these are the attitudes, the exploits that they're supposed to be showing, and it is the willingness to serve others. Versus, you know, as I said in, you know, over in 14, they're self-seeking, their envy, they're boasting and lying. As I understand that there in that passage, they're self-seeking that wisdom. Look at me, I'm wise, and going to the point of exaggerating it to where they're boasting of it, and it's a lie, because they are not wise as they should be. You know, Mike,
you talk about this concept of reason. In the book that we're not going to get to, Jude, verse 10, it says that these people blaspheme all that they do not understand, and they're destroyed by all that they, like unreasoning animals, understand instinctively. This idea of unreasoning animals, as an alternative to looking at reasoning from the standpoint of compromising or not compromising, look at the concept of reasoning from the standpoint of willing to submit themselves. These people here in Jude were unreasoning in the sense that you couldn't reason with them about righteousness. They were unreasonable when it comes to what's right before God. They were bound to their own destruction because of the greed that was within them. And I suggest that perhaps this idea of reasoning is more along that line than say an issue comes up and we just need to talk and work it out. This is something deeper than that. And more like, I think, maybe what Jude is suggesting, maybe what's meant by reasoning here.
That's a good comment. And I was trying to see if that's different than the idea of submitting. I mean, they're basically, if they're not willing to reason, they're not willing to back down, they're not submitting from their own desires here, they're stuck fast.
But you look at how he describes them. You know, verse 16 says jealousy, but verse 14 says something about that jealousy. It's bitter jealousy. You see, these are some strong feelings with these people that he's working against. So that's the concept of unreason. When somebody is bitter, you're not going to be able to reason with them.
Yeah, it's not a matter of speaking logically, because at that point it's beyond
a logical ability,
beyond a logical discussion. Thank you, Mike.
Mike?
Josh?
Titus 3:9 says, "But avoid foolish controversies and genealogies and strife and disputes about the law, for they are unprofitable and worthless. Reject a factious man after a first and second warning, knowing that such a man is perverted and is sinning, being self-condemned." Idea of being like reasonable or being willing to yield, I'm sure we've run into situations where we talk to someone and we had just met them and we find out they're in the middle of being a sinner. Like they're, being involved in fornication or adultery, or you know, in the middle of some kind of illegal matter. And our first thing we want to do is say, look, you're wrong, you're doing this wrong. We've got to, you know, show them, or we get the impulse to show them in the Bible, this is where your sin is, and change. But you had to, like, weigh the situation and see if that's wise. And when we're getting in debates with each other about our understandings about some of the finer details of our faith, we can really push it so hard that instead of us accomplishing something with that person, the same way that we probably wouldn't accomplish anything with the person who's living in adultery by just saying, look, here's the adultery verse. We have to, you know, weigh, is this a time to be reasonable and say, if this person isn't even interested in God, if this person isn't even interested in this information, if they're so caught up in what their faith is or what their life is, why is what I'm about to say going to be effective to them? So the reasoning there is this going to be fruitful? Is this going to have the result we're looking for? And it takes wisdom to know if the direction you're going to go with, knowing some information about the person you're going to be talking to, is going to have a good result.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with what you're saying, but I think I just want to make a comment about, you mentioned fornication, whether to be wise about it. I think that verse, in my mind, is talking about some things that maybe aren't as... You're getting hung up on endless disputes, these things that don't matter as much. Or you know, there aren't crucial, hard-line things we know. Like, fornication is something I think that you'd have to address. Whether you know the results or not, it needs to be addressed, and you can't decide whether or not to discuss it because you don't know the outcome. But, like, yeah, by discussing the genealogy, what's going to come out of that? It's just kind of some useless debate. Or, you know, there's, you know, some other matters that, you know, that people differ on.
I just know when I get into conversation with someone like that, or even with someone who's a Christian, I can feel myself saying, I need to push this. I need to, you know, not yield, because they need to know that this is the truth, and I can't, you know, be, you know, partial on it. But then I feel like where wisdom comes in is, you have to weigh, is this person even listening to me, or are they just getting more mad about what I'm saying? And it's not going to result in anything. So, you know, Stephen, he didn't hold back. But then you see in other areas where, you know, Christ was, when he forgave the woman who was adultery, go on, sin no more, he didn't go into a, you know, a long discussion about, you know, adultery is this, and here's, you know, quoting a bunch of verses to her, does it go on, sin no more. He could weigh the heart. He knew what was going on in that woman's soul, I believe. We don't. So that's where our wisdom comes in, or that we hopefully are getting from studying God's Word, praying, and being committed to Him, that we can tell, or we have a confidence in how we're handling the situation by having wisdom God's given. Otherwise, if we're just going on our own whim, I feel like I need to push this, and I'm going to push it until you get so bothered you leave, and now it's, you know, having an opposite effect, then it's just us not being wise and not being effective.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, yeah, you can drive people away, and we all have to know that point to discussing truth. And then when, you know, it depends whether we're talking about Christians or non-Christians. You're talking about non-Christians, as I said, you know, don't cast your pearls before swine. They're not listening anymore. You're wasting your breath. At least you spoke about it, and now you can stop. You know, with Christians, and you know, we're dealing here with, you know, I think in this particular verse, we're talking about the teachers are within Christ. They have to submit and yield because they're in wrong behavior, and that has to change. You can't walk away from this particular issue when it's going to cause more trouble not to. But yeah, you're right. And depending where, you know, there's different situations will, you know, have different outcomes. And we have to be wise enough to know how to, when push, when not to push, when to yield. Does anyone else have any comments?
I think that's the case in any time you have authority or you have wisdom that you're trying to portray or trying to help another person. You're going to think of, like, me as a mother for Lily, or if I'm a teacher for the children in my class, what are the needs of the people that I'm trying to serve? And that's what we just need to get in our heads, that you know, a teacher or a parent or a husband or a boss or whatever we are, we're serving those people. So what are we doing? What deeds are we doing? What are we saying? What are we going to do to encourage the right behaviors and the, you know, bring out the best in the people we're serving?
Thank you, Jamie. Yeah, that certainly, as these men as masters and teachers, their focus should be on serving to, you know, produce good fruits and not envying and bitterness amongst themselves.
We were talking about wisdom, Michael, and in Proverbs, the first chapter, when he talks, it is the book of wisdom for life under the sun, it's in verse 7, and it's said at least 6 or 7 more times throughout the book, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge or wisdom, and fools despise wisdom and instruction. That's the difference between the two classes of people right here, you know, that we're studying in James. Some of them, out of the fear of the Lord, will get wisdom, like Mike said, will bow to the wisdom and in their teaching, but the others, out of their arrogance and pride, they're called fools. You know, they don't want wisdom. They just want to spout for their own vainglory what they want.
Yeah, that's correct. Unless if anyone doesn't have any more comments, we're going to move on to James chapter 4. I did have one more question at the end, you know, what the result is, but we've already covered that, so we just any worried about the questions. Yeah. You know, with earthly wisdom, if they continue in that, they're just going to continue in disorder. And of course, get wisdom, you can bring about righteousness and the fruits of righteousness. James chapter 4 begins a new discussion. Well, not new. I think he's still continuing on in the same, some of the same thread, but in a different area. Pride versus humility. And I think that links very much with what he's just been telling these men. But I wanted to ask him what issues and incorrect attitudes are exhibited by these people as identified here in these first verses of chapter 4, 1 through 10. I guess specifically in 1 through 5, we look at that. Where do wars and fights come from among you? Do they not come from your desires for pleasure and the war that war in your members? You lust and do not have, you murder and covet and cannot obtain. You fight in battle, yet you do not have because you do not ask. And you ask and do not receive because you ask amiss, and you may spend it on your pleasures. Adulterers and adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Whoever therefore wants to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. Or do you think the scriptures say in vain, the Spirit dwells in us, yearns jealously? And also in, I think I had 11 and 12, it talks about, do not speak evil of one another, brethren. And he who speaks evil of a brother and judges his brother speaks evil of the law and judges the law. So what kind of attitudes of these people have we seen? We know they're not the right attitudes because he's correct, trying to correct them.
Pride, jealousy.
Yeah, pride and jealousy. I guess what issues is this brought about?
Fighting.
Yeah, there's fighting and battling amongst themselves out of this envy and jealousy. What else is he out of their desires, out of their lust? I want to look at that. My 1 verse 2, I mean, these are pretty strong desires, given that he says you murder and covet and cannot attain. And, you know, I don't think they're actually murdering one another, but the idea of covetousness, murderous covetousness. You know, the idea of you're wanting it so bad, you're maybe having that intention of, the intention to. I mean, I don't know how, you know, it's that strong of a passion.
It could be killing friendships.
Yeah, it's certainly the idea of something very damaging, isn't it? And of course, this has also led to, and what was in verse 11 and 12, beyond just the fighting and the wars, what were they doing in verses 11?
Speaking
against their brother. Yes, well, thank you both of you. I'll give you both credit. Yeah, they're speaking, you know, evil, speaking against one another, you know, speaking evil of one another. Call that a cursing one another to some sense. And so what, I think we already heard in the attitude, but you know, what was, out of all of these things we've seen, and in, these also stem from further back, you know, in chapter 3, you know, in 5, verse 5, you talk about the tongue. Yeah, the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. Verses 8 and 9, you know, discussing the tongue, and with it we curse one another. In 14 and 16, we've just covered this envy and self-seeking, and we see this in also chapter 4. These are all the same attitudes that are driving all of these different actions. They're using their tongue to harm one another, against one another. And I think, what is that, the root cause of all of this? In James, verse 6. 7 and 10.
Pride.
Yeah, pride. You know, I established them as, you know, this envying and self-seeking about wisdom. They're boasting of their wisdom. They're seeking this position. I think it all stems from this pride, where he's summing up everything here in chapter 4, this whole section, to the master, these masters and teachers, these experts. It's all driven by pride. This pride for the position, pride to be, known, I guess. Mike?
Back up in verse 2, this concept of murder. I'm reading out of the English Standard Version, but notice the parallel wording in this verse. You desire, later on in the verse it says you covet. Mm-hmm. Then it says, and you do not have. And later it says, and cannot obtain. Then it says, so you murder. And then later it says, so you fight and quarrel. So he's kind of set up a parallel here. So the murder has to do with the fighting and the quarrel. Now, somebody mentioned that it ends a relationship or some words to that effect. And how could fighting and quarreling be, you know, compared to murder? Well, the idea is you fight and quarrel so heavily and to the extent that you show no regard for the other person. It does end a relationship. That's true. But it's like, you know, you're going to insist on what you want that they have. And to the extent that you might as well have killed them. In your mind,
it's the depth of their intent.
Yeah. So that I think the parallel there, I have to see what he means by the word murder.
Yeah, and I thank you for that clarification, Mike. Sometimes I see it and I don't always describe it as well as that. And anyways, we were just mentioning, we saw that they're desiring, they lust for something, they can't obtain it, even through this fighting and battling. And of course, God says, you know, he says here, he's like, if you ask, I can give it to you. But we see, I guess, looking at that, are there cases where when God will not answer prayer requests? You know, he says, you could have something if you request it. As it says in verse 2 and 3, you know, you don't have it because you don't ask for it. But also looking at 1 John 5:14, also verse 3 there. And following that, it says you don't have it because you don't ask for it, but it says you ask and do not receive because you ask amiss. And also looking at 1 John 5:14, you Now this is the confidence that we have in Him, that if we ask anything according to His will, He will hear us. And we know that He hears us whatever we ask. We know that we have the petitions that we have asked of Him. You know, we see in different places in the Bible, if we ask, He'll grant it to us. And yet in James here, he says, you don't get it.
Maybe asking with the wrong motives, the wrong intentions, with the wrong heart. But then also, it says in James, I know we haven't gotten there yet, but in 5:16, but I think this still applies, that the effective prayers of a righteous man can accomplish much. And in 1 Peter 3:12, it talks about the prayers of the righteous will be heard. If God's not going to listen to our... He can't answer our prayers if we're not being righteous and if we don't have the heart, because He's not listening to our prayers. So no, He's not going to answer them if He's not even listening to them because of our own personal situation and strength and faith.
Yeah. And that is correct. I mean, He's not going to answer something that's going to be against His will, is He? Or... through requesting something against God's will. You know, He's not going to answer that prayer. And, you know, lining up with, you know, what are these people desiring here? If you're looking at it from the idea of these masters, these experts, or what have they been desiring this whole time? To me, it seems, you know, this position, the position preeminence amongst the brethren, you know, that, look at me, I'm wiser and smarter than the rest of you. They're, you know, resorting to, you know, discrediting one another, as we see in verse 11, speaking evil one another. You know, they're using their tongue for these, you know, wrong purposes. And here we see in chapter 4 this battling and striving. I see it as, you know, jockeying for position, you know, and the intent to subvert the opposition and be the one on top.
We also need to think that He, on our prayers when you're asking it, how we ask, if it's His will, whatever He knows is best for us, we also need to keep in mind that His answer may not be the one that we want, but He's still answering.
Yeah. I was going to finish up there. In their effort to be the one on top, I don't know if they're praying for, hey, Lord, make me be the one on top. Or even if they're praying for wisdom, yeah, you're back to your motive. What their motive was is, I want to be better than everyone. Not for, how can I serve if I have more wisdom?